Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
Good evening, it's Tuesday night, you're tuned to Rocksport DAB and it's me, Maureen McGonigal, with Let's Hear It For The Girls. Tonight, my guest is Carolina de Zazuza, and I don't think I've said that right after all the practice we've had, Carolina, who's a volunteer with Leap Sport and the Diversity and Inclusion Youth Ambassador with the Scottish FA. So it's a warm welcome, Carolina, and we're going to hear a wee bit more from you after we do our weekly roundup. But tell me at the very start, how do we say it again? Let me have another go. Carolina de Zuza Iza.
Almost, very close, yeah. Carolina de Souza Iza.
Carolina de Souza Iza, wonderful name, wonderful name. So let's get started with roundup. I'm going to start with gymnastics, and an acrobatic partnership from East Kilbride Gymnastic Clubs have been invited to an international competition in Mexico. The 12-18 women's pair of Brenna Cruikshank and Mia Costella have been invited by British Gymnastics to compete at the Acrobatic Gymnastics Pan American Championships, Monterrey, Mexico, from Friday the 22nd to Sunday. So it's from Friday to Sunday the 22nd of November. So it's congratulations to the pair on that invitation. And also still in gymnastics, Louise Christie from Beacon Rhythmic Gymnastics Club will compete at the 28 Portimão International Tournament in Portugal. Now, you're going to tell me.
Portimão, yeah.
Portimão. I'm loving this. Portimão International Tournament in Portugal from Sunday the 1st to Thursday the 5th of September. In being selected, Louise became the first Scottish gymnast to represent Great Britain at rhythm gymnastics since Lauren Brash from West Lothian, which was in 2013 at the GB Youth Olympic Games in Australia. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah, good going for gymnastics, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
On to judo, and in day five of the World Judo Championships in Tokyo, Sally Conway was in magnificent form as she won the British Judo's first medal of the championships, claiming bronze in the 70 kilo category to add to her Olympic bronze and European silver. So big shout out to Sally.
There was actually a Portuguese female judoka who also won a silver at that tournament.
Ah, so you're a bit torn because you're Portuguese and you've got a bit of American in you and a bit of Scottish.
Yeah, a little bit.
But that's good, so you can claim success with one or two or three countries even.
Yeah.
On to athletics. And, you know, it was another tweet from Eilish McCogan this week regarding comments on social media. Not long after the comment about her body shape, and she answered it, she announced that she was proud to be one half of the world's fastest mother-daughter duo in history, and went on to explain that earlier that week she'd someone make a comment that she was a has-been and was only getting by in the sport because of her name. And, you know, she then went on to say, I feel confident that with my mum as my coach, we can continue to get faster. This has been isn't quite done yet. I'm making sure the McCogan name remains a fast one. Do you know what? The question for me, should we respond to Twitter trolls? You know, are you giving them air? Is it better just to ignore them?
Yeah, I think a lot of times you're right. It is especially with experience with kind of social media and a lot of roles that I've had, is you are going to always have, you know, trolls, Twitter trolls, when you're saying something that's maybe controversial or when you are like a high-achieving athlete like that. And sometimes it is best to just ignore the comments because it just becomes worse in the long run.
Well, also as well, it takes up your energy.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
It lives in your headspace, doesn't it? You know, and you think, I've got to respond. Whereas you think, these people are insignificant.
Exactly.
Let me get on with my job and let me post the positive things.
Yeah,
I think we're on the same page there.
Mm-hmm.
Also in athletics, I'm delighted to hear this, Maria Lyle ran a season's best to pick up gold in the 100 metres T35/36 final in the Paris Para Athletics Grand Prix this week. She tweeted that she had had a huge breakthrough in racing in Paris by running her fastest 100 metres since 2016, and a big thanks to Bowie to Bowie for all your help. Maria again was a winner at the Scottish Women in Sport Awards. quite a few years ago. She was a young up-and-coming athlete, won the Sports Scotland Young Sportswoman of the Year. So it's delighted to see that she's still in there. And I think she had a sort of a spell where she was down and out a little, and she's fought back and she's coming back up. So it's really
come back.
Really great to hear it. And it's congratulations to Michelle Sanderson for winning gold at the Scottish Masters Championships in the 10,000 metres. She achieved a track personal best with a time of 36 minutes and 14 seconds. Also, rugby, back on to rugby again. It was sixth place for Scotland women's under-18s in their debut at the Rugby European Girls Under-18 Championships, and I'm sure we're going to hear more from them. Now, good news, again, harping back to Scottish women in sport. I think just last year, Shona McIntosh, who was named the Scottish Women in Sport UWS Sportswoman of the Year, has had a great week in Rio. She picked up the World Cup silver and she then went on to win the gold. And I read recently that she is number one in the event. So, you know, just a huge shout out to Shona. And yeah, hopefully she can hold that position. And,
hopefully, yeah.
You know, you're only there to be pulled back down again, aren't you? You know, get to the top and everyone else wants to be there. So
exactly, you have to stay up there.
Yeah, that's a difficult time now. Carling back on the scene is Teve Muirhead, and they won gold at the Cameron Brune Oakville Fall Classic. So they had a good start, and it's good to see that Eve's back to her winning ways out last year, I think, with some injury problems. So delighted that they're back to their winning ways. Mm-hmm. So we're now going to go on to football. Oh, how delighted am I to see that. 8 goals under the belt. 8
so
goals.
So good.
I mean, come on.
So
know.
Good.
Uh-huh. It was the first game in the UEFA Women's Euro 2021 qualifiers, and it couldn't have been a better start for Shelley Kerr's team. The goals came from Claire Emsley, Kim Little, Jane Rose and Caroline Weir. You know, Kim did score 5.
5, yeah.
But, you know, we've got another Claire, Jane and Caroline on the sheet as well.
Definitely.
I watched it on television, didn't make it to Easter Road, but it was a totally dominant display. It was some wonderful football. Could have been a few more goals added on
as
well.
Could have. Uh-huh. Yeah, I unfortunately didn't make it either, but watched most of it. And yeah, it was a fantastic performance. And it was also good for the, you know, for the Cyprus team for their first, I think, competitive match as well. So really good.
Yeah, I used to, quite a few years ago, I used to run the Cyprus Cup.
All right. Okay.
It's actually Scotland who initiated the Cyprus Cup underneath with Anna Signeul. And so we held a tournament there every February in which Cyprus did compete. Mm-hmm. I think we had 3 venues, so we had quite a lot of teams there. And yes, there were struggles in Cyprus at that point in terms of, you know, getting their standard up. So as you say, it's great to see them on that stage.
You have to start somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And it can only build from there. I mean, with Scotland having qualified for the World Cup, that was such a huge achievement. And now it can only go, you know, up and up and up from here. So,
well, I can remember sitting in the stand with Scotland for many years, and we were at the other end, the receiving end of nothing, you know, loss. Mm-hmm. So you just got to pick yourself up and get yourself.
Yeah, dig deep.
Yes. I think I was slightly disappointed to see the crowd was only 6,000. You know, we were looking at Jamaica being 18,000.
True.
So
I mean, it still is a record number for
if you take Jamaica
competitive
out, match. Yeah, if you take Jamaica out of the equation, it's higher than the last game.
Yeah, I think the last one was 2,000 and something.
I think they've had about 5,000 before, but but it may be the fact that they build up a following in a certain stadium and then they move it elsewhere.
Yeah,
and it's hard to maybe see.
Yeah, I think Jamaica was amazing just because it was the last one right before they headed off to the World Cup, and there was such a hype
and it was.
You know, I was there. It was incredible. So
yes, it was excellent, wasn't it? And also over in Ireland, it was 2 good wins and clean sheets for the friendly fixtures of Pauline Hamill's under-19 squad following their participation in the Euros this summer, and she was quite delighted at the start. So the squad competed well against strong opposition at the Euros, and now they're kicking on with a fresh squad, and that's what we have to look for, you know, for the national squad, more players coming through, more success, building the confidence and getting that pathway strong so that 100%. Shelley has more to choose from.
Exactly. And I mean, with an under-17 squad now as well, who just had their match against Slovenia last week as well. So.
Yeah, so excellent. Water polo. Not much difference between, well, you know, in Scotland, actually, you know, you're in a football park, you could be playing water polo given the weather we've got at times. But it's a quick shout out to Niamh Maloney, who got 3 goals as part of Team GB Junior Women at the European Water Polo Championships. It was actually 15-4 over Bulgaria. And it was also good luck to Dunfermline Water Polo Club players Caitlin McRobbie, Claire Maloney. Oh, there's another Maloney. I wondered if they are related. Mm-hmm. Alison Tate, Ethne Lawrence, and their Caledonian Water Polo Club women team's mate, who are competing at Barcelona. I think it's the 5th to the 8th of September. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen water polo. Is it a sport that you are aware of in Portugal?
It's not very big in Portugal, no, actually. I had heard of it, of course, but I hadn't really watched a water polo match, really, until... I was at university and I watched one of my friends play it, the university match.
It's a tough sport, isn't it?
Yeah, I've heard it's quite violent as well. You don't see it, but it all happens underneath the water. So
I mean, for the whole time, your feet are not allowed to touch the bottom.
Very physical, tiring, I would say, for sure.
I was fascinated. I was delighted to be invited up by Gail Logan at one point to present the medals up at Dundee.
Okay.
And I just found it fascinating and really exciting. Mm-hmm. And because you're looking down in something the way, you know, most pools are banked with the seats, you could see the action, you could follow it quite clearly. Mm-hmm. I loved it,
definitely.
So we're going to finish up this week's roundup talking about cricket, and Scotland's hopes of a T20 World Cup qualification suffered a major blow as a 6-wicket defeat to Papua New Guinea at Lachlan's put their Group A campaign in the balance. Despite a battling performance from captain Catherine Bryce, including the highest individual score of the tournament so far, a fine runnable innings of 30 from Brenda Tower marshalled a well-judged chase from PNG, which was completed with 3 balls to spare. Now, this is an important tournament because it's qualification into the world, so we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Definitely, good luck.
Yeah, I mean, cricket in Scotland, it's... probably viewed a bit like water polo in Portugal. Mm. You know, not an awful lot of people know about it, but they're working so hard and they're bringing in so many good ideas and different campaigns, particularly to encourage young women to get into cricket.
Yes,
so,
definitely.
Yeah. Well, that's all we've got to round us up this week. So I'm going to say thank you for your input there, Lena. We're going to go for a little break. But just before we go to the break, as I say every week, if you've got results, if you've got an event, if you've got something you want to chat about, if you want to come and be my guest in the studio, please don't be shy. Please contact me. You'll find all the social media contacts on the Rocksport website. Just drop a little line and be delighted to have you on. But at the moment, just put on the kettle, have a cup of tea and join us in a couple of minutes to hear more from Catalina.
Scottish rugby is on the up and Rocksport Radio is following this resurgence by bringing you The Lineout every Wednesday evening from 8. Lewis Stewart has one of the best contact books in the business, which means the people who really matter in Scottish rugby give you the latest news and gossip on Scotland's most trusted rugby radio show. Get into the action with Lewis Stewart and The Lineout, Wednesdays from 8 p.m. on Rock Sport Radio. Love music, live sport.
Motorpoint, we put the super into car supermarket. We're here to save the day with a choice of over 7,000 low mileage, nearly new cars. Find your next car in a flash with our lightning fast service and same day drive away. Plus, with Motorpoint's price pledge, if you find the same car for less, we'll match the price and give you a £50 Amazon voucher. Visit Motorpoint Glasgow today, just 2 minutes from junction 3 of the M74. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
The list of things you need to do gets longer at this time of year, whether that's for the house or in your business. So tick one thing off your list right now. Your septic tank could need emptied. Let Grant Henderson Tankers empty your septic tank in the home or work, farm, factory or workshop at very competitive rates. We are septic tank specialists, experienced, safe and dedicated to environmental safety with our own licensed disposal site. Find out more at wemovesh.it or call 01698 284 987. Grant Henderson Tankers. Let the experts manage your waste.
William, Pamela and Anthony were sold investments by banks and ended up losing money. Luckily, they contacted Goodwin Barrett and were able to claim back a total of £65,500. If you've lost money on an investment sold by a bank, even if you no longer have it or the paperwork, just text GOOD to 66777 to discover how much you could be owed. That's GOOD to 66777. You don't need a claims management company to make a complaint, and if unsuccessful, you can refer it free to the Financial Ombudsman.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
Welcome back to tonight's Let's Hear It for the Girls and to our special guest, Carolina de Souza Issa.
Thank you.
I have been practicing in the
week. Yes, can tell.
Did I get a gold star then?
Yes, gold star.
Well, you know, first of all, I've got to ask you, it's a wonderful name.
Thank you.
What's its origins?
Well, it's Portuguese, and let me tell you that in Portugal, it's a very common name. So I guess here it's very different for a lot of people, but back home, it's a very typical name.
Does it have a meaning?
Not that I know of, no. None of those words can be translated really into English. They don't, and even in Portuguese, they don't have like a meaning of anything, I don't think. At least that I know of. My parents have never told me, so maybe.
So we've established you from Portugal.
Yes.
Yes. But you've got a bit of everything.
Yeah. Whenever I say, I always tell people, you know, people ask me, I'm Portuguese because that's where I was born, that's where I grew up. But I'm actually half Portuguese, half American. So my mom is actually American from Boston, and my dad's Portuguese, and they met over back in the States, and then my mom made the big decision to move to Portugal when she knew nobody and none of the language, and then settled there, and she says that was a fantastic decision that she made, and that she really liked, you know, raising my sister and myself in Portugal. So
yeah, and I take it she's fluent now.
Yeah, she you know, she learnt it just by talking and being around my dad and his friends and family. Of course, she still has an American accent that me and my sister sometimes still make fun of here and there. But no, she really is pretty much fluent, I'd say, you know. So yeah, it's really, really great.
And do you get an opportunity to go over to see the American side of the family?
So actually I don't have much of American side anymore because my grandparents passed away when I was only 2 years old, unfortunately. There's some cousins and things like that, but we don't really go over often. So the last time I was there was actually 11 years ago, if you can believe it. I would really like to go back, of course, but maybe not while Trump's around. Yeah.
Oh, well, there we are. So, but also you're sort of building up your own little family because you're an auntie now to two little boys, Jaime and Gonçalo.
Jaime and Gonçalo, yeah.
It was close. Jaime and Gonçalo.
Yeah, two little boys.
So you must miss them being over in Scotland.
Yeah, I do. I do miss them a lot. I was actually just there a couple of weeks ago and spent a lot of quality time with all of them. So it was really, really nice and just something to look forward to every time I go home now as well, to be able to
spend time with them. I can think at that age would be great fun.
Yeah, tiring, but I can always, you know, hand them back to my sister, which is the perfect. I'll be the fun, exciting auntie and stuff. So
that's it, exactly. So it was really interesting because you told me you went to an international school, and I'm wondering what exactly is that and how did you like it?
Yeah, I went to St. Julian's International School. It was a British international school, actually. So we knew, you know, we did the GCSEs, so different to here in Scotland, but similar to in England. And we did this program called the International Baccalaureate. So it's kind of it's like not the A-levels, but it's a different kind of system to the A-levels, or the Scottish Highers, I guess. But it was really, really great growing up in kind of an international environment like that. A lot of people like myself were also Portuguese, so maybe almost 50% were Portuguese nationals. And then quite a lot of British students who came to Portugal and were there, and then from around the world as well. No, my mom actually still works at that school, and she says that it's actually become even more of an international kind of vibe than when I was studying there. But it wasn't a boarding school.
I was going to ask you, were you D?
There was no option for boarding school, but it was, you know, primary, secondary, and actually also had a kind of Portuguese section where they did the Portuguese curriculum as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it was really, really lovely environment to grow up in.
They had quite a heavy focus on sport as well, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was involved in sport ever since I can remember, really. Most of the sports that I took part in were volleyball, basketball, and football, and then some athletics as well. So those were the main ones. But ever since I can remember, I'd always, you know, we'd have competitions with other international schools, and always something going on every day after school, pretty much. So,
and do you think at that point, I mean, can you think back, because we talk now about the dropout in schools, you know, with young girls about 13, was that different in an international school? You know, was sport quite a huge part of the curriculum so that the girls stayed involved, or did you have the same problems as we're experiencing now?
Actually, from kind of, you know, living here the past few years and hearing from my friends' experiences, you know, who a lot of them are Scottish or English, they said that, you know, a lot of, there wasn't that much involvement in sport for girls in schools. Whereas for me, it was quite different. I felt that I always had the same opportunities that the boys did, for example. We always had the same length of seasons and the same opportunities to play the same sports. So in that sense, yeah, I always felt like that, you know, I could play for as long and as much as I wanted, just as much as the boys could. And in terms of dropout rates, I didn't feel that, at least. There's obviously always the people who weren't so keen on sports, but at least with my kind of my friends that I played sports with, none of them actually dropped out ever since, you know, we started. It kind of just kept going and got better.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because it is a major issue, and it's always a talking point when we look at women and girls in sport and the dropout rate and why that is.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to look and see what happens in other countries and look at the models of good practice and
definitely
something
yeah.
we could bring here. You also participated in what would be kind of the equivalent of the Duke of Edinburgh Award.
Exactly. It was.
What was it called?
It was called the Prémio Infante Dom Henrique.
So you're going to have to try and make me say that, because I don't think I would ever manage.
Yeah, Prémio Infante Dom Henrique, which is it literally the equivalent to the Duke of Edinburgh in Portugal, and kind of when I use it here, it's the Duke of Edinburgh, you know, when I talk about it. But literally exactly the same, you know, had the bronze, silver, and gold awards, and I did all three of them, and the gold was definitely a challenge. We were up in Spain actually for that. We went for 5 days to Spanish mountains back in, I think it was like an October, November time. So
what age would you be then, Carolina?
I think I was 16 uh-huh. when I did it. But fortunately my group was fantastic. It was me and another girl and three boys, and we were all very sporty, and the, like, you know, we knew everything about the bearings and compass and how to do all that. So
I bet you the other groups thought, wow, look at them, who do they think they are?
Yeah, so it was we were lucky with the group that we had, because a lot of, you know, we got to the campsites on time, we had time to relax and eat whilst it was still light out, whereas a lot of the groups, you know, didn't, basically arrived at night time, no, just got into their tents,
oh,
had blisters all over
lot,
there. Yeah. So it was, I'd say, one of my successes for sure, yeah.
You're sitting there with a smug smile on your face.
Yeah.
I can see it, yeah. Oh, that's really good. I mean, I think all these things are really character building, and that's something
100%.
That, yeah.
I recommend it to anyone, really. I know here maybe the weather isn't as great as it would be in Spain or Portugal,
But I think here the difference is we're used to it.
Yeah,
it's not coming as a surprise, so you're prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
Even in summer, we're prepared for the winter.
Yeah, exactly.
As you know, how have you found our weather, by the way?
You know, it's... I don't actually care too much about it. It's the one thing that I do miss from home is the 323 days of sunshine or something like that. But... I don't know, just living in Edinburgh, it's the just gotten used to, there's so much culture, so much going on all the time that, yeah, there are the dark and dreary days, but I don't mind it too much.
I suppose when you think about it, being a young child coming up in Portugal, you know, when you've got the freedom to go out and play, as you say, 320 days of the year is great.
Mm-hmm.
But as an adult, giving you this opportunity to have a bit of culture, Edinburgh is quite nice. So,
yeah.
So I think you've been quite fortunate in the way things have worked out.
Yeah, like no, for sure. And there's a lot of things actually about Edinburgh that remind me quite a lot of Lisbon as well, in a way. But yeah, no, it's been a really lovely almost 6 years actually being here. So
yeah, well, I was just going to say to you, because you moved here in September 2013 to go to the University of Edinburgh
exactly
to study applied sports science.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why did you choose that particular area?
Well, I always knew that I was interested in sports, and kind of at the time I was maybe more inclined to like interested in sports psychology. And my mom, actually, she's a careers advisor, so she helped me a lot with kind of deciding what universities to apply to and what courses to go for. And she thought that that would be, you know, a right fit, because it was quite a general maybe course that then I could become more specific with. So that's why I decided to study that. And Edinburgh was actually the only, Edinburgh University was the only Scottish university I applied to. But I decided to come here. One reason, because my sister also studied at the University of Edinburgh quite a while before me, because she's quite a lot older than me, 11 years difference. But the other reason, of course, was because it was free for EU nationals. No, you know, it won't anymore. But won't be anymore. But at the time, it was a big incentive for sure, to especially for my parents, for me to come study in Edinburgh, and very fortunate as well to have had that opportunity. So those were the main two reasons.
Oh. And while you were there, I think this is really interesting. You get involved in sport development, and you also get involved in a project in Tanzania.
Yes, exactly. So it was a sport development project through a society at the university.
What kind of year were you at university this time? Was it your first year?
It was during my first year, exactly. And I kind of, you know, that year where you're trying to get involved in different things at uni.
Well, I think particularly when you're coming from abroad, you know, you're going to have to build up all your friendships.
Yeah.
So to join things, it gives you that sort of in, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so it was called Edinburgh Global Partnerships, EGP. And they kind of organized, a student-led charity, organized different projects around the world, maybe about six or seven that year. And my project specifically was a sport development one, which really was very appealing to me when I saw it. And it was in partnership with an Edinburgh charity called Yes Tanzania, Youth Empowerment Through Sport. So they have kind of an office in Edinburgh, and they do a lot of work in Tanzania, all around the country, really. And so I was involved with four other people. And throughout that kind of maybe about 7 months of that first year, we were fundraising to... you know, take all that money to basically build two multi-purpose sport courts in a town called Yusa River up in the north of Tanzania, as well as deliver sport leadership training in the area. So we fundraised about £7,500 throughout the year, and obviously none of our travel costs or anything were through the fundraising. That was all, you know, our own money. And then we went over for 6 weeks in July and August. So it was a really, really great time. And yeah, I learned a lot with it from it. And it really sparked my interest in the idea of sport as an agent for inclusion and social change, really.
So tell me, when you were out in Tanzania, what was your actual role? What did you do? Were you physically helping to build?
Yeah. For about 3 weeks, we were actually, you know, manual labor with kind of the local community, properly building these two multi-purpose sport courts. One of them was a basketball court and basketball netball, and the other one was a volleyball court, because in that area they actually only had kind of what was a football pitch, but the kind of local leisure center, they wanted to be able to provide more sports for the community, and they said, could you build us these two courts? And it was really fantastic, because afterwards we actually got to, you know, watch people be able to use these courts that we built with the local community as well, and so it was a really great partnership, and just nice to see kind of the fruits of our labor, and still afterwards as well, seeing photos on Facebook and things like that from them setting up their own women's, you know, their netball team, their first one ever. So that was really to know that they could do that because we'd helped them to build those courts was a really, really lovely kind
of. So you actually worked with the community as well. So
yeah.
You weren't isolated. So I think you must look back on that with real fondness.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and I'm very close to the, you know, the group that I went out with still, which is really, really nice, because we obviously spent a lot of time together, and it was like we bonded over that. And yeah, I think it's something that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life for sure.
Yeah, I think so. And you're talking about this sparked your interest in sport for an agent for inclusion and social change. That's a big part of what you do in terms of LEAP Sports.
Exactly.
But let me, before you go there, because I want to hold on to that thought, but you joined the Women's Football Club when you were at university. And again, this would be an opportunity for you to make friends. And but you say to me that it was by far one of the best decisions you'd ever made. Why was that?
Yeah, so I joined, you know, EWFC at university, and it was a fantastic, just a great, you know, 4 years that I was a part of the club. And I think it's just, I made friends for life, I can say that for sure. And I think that sport and football specifically for me is what it's all about, is that social aspect of it and being able to make friends for life. You know, you bond over this. You might have totally different backgrounds, might be interested in totally different things, but you all kind of have this passion for the sport, and that's what brings you together. And the girls in the club were all so great, and had, you know, the best time with them. And that's kind of one of the things from uni that I remember the most, apart from my degrees, obviously. Yeah, you know, those come second.
I don't think you're unlike any other student, the things they remembered about university.
Exactly.
But the football, yes, and I've worked with university football at times. It was always a Wednesday, wasn't it?
Yeah, Wednesday games.
Yeah.
So it was really great. It took up a lot of time, everything, but it was really, really nice.
Mm. Now, in your third year at university, you came out as gay.
Yeah.
Was this pressure? Did you feel it was something you had to do? What was your reasons behind, which I think is quite a personal thing, that having to tell the world, I mean, is it any of their business, first of all?
Mm-hmm.
So what were your reasons behind that?
Well, it was never like a coming out of, like, you know, putting it on social media or anything. I'm not that kind of person at all. But, you know, it was a gradual coming out to friends and family. First person I told was actually my sister, and then kind of went from there. But I wasn't one of those kids, I guess, that ever really struggled with my sexuality as a child. I just never really realized it. I never kind of was confronted by it. And even though, you know, I said that I loved my school and my upbringing, looking back now, I can see that it was quite like a bubble in a way, and that nobody I knew was gay or anything different. And so it kind of, I guess I never had that environment that I felt like that kind of came out in me. And then I guess once I went to uni and kind of got involved in different things there, it was just a sort of self-realization that, you know, this is who I am. So, of course, it was a bit difficult at first, kind of coming to terms with that, saying it out loud. But then gradually, you know, specifically being in the football environment as well, I found a lot of people who were like me, you know, who were also gay. And that really helped, because knowing that I wasn't alone, And from then onwards, that's kind of like how I just got involved as well with LEAP.
The fact that you're an activist in terms of, you know, understanding yourself helps you to help other people.
Yeah, exactly. I've been really fortunate that I haven't necessarily been, I guess, discriminated against for my sexuality, you know, because living in Scotland, it is, I guess, in comparison to many, many countries around the world, a very inclusive place and accepting. And sometimes I have friends who are like, oh, but why are you so loud and proud about all this? Not in a negative way. It's something that they like about me, but, you know, they mention it. Mm-hmm. And I say, you know, I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it for the people who don't have that platform and who can't be themselves, who don't have that voice. And that's why, you know, we need to act out and we need to be activists, really, every day.
I mean, you said there that Scotland's pretty inclusive, and having worked in women's football for many years, I know that women in sport are very inclusive. They're not judgmental. They embrace the inclusion and the diversity. It doesn't seem to be the same in the male side of the game. You know, there's always debates going on. Should, you know, a male player come out as gay? Is it important, do you think, for sport to have these role models? I mean, what is the benefit of that? Or is it a personal thing? And how difficult do you think it would be? What would the reaction be like?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to point out that, you know, homophobia is still very present within, you know, women's sports and women's football, you know, with kind of saying that every female footballer, every female rugby player is a lesbian, or, you know, these things, which isn't necessarily true. It's just stereotypes. So, you know, in that sense, it's still very present. So we can't forget that. But I think it is very, very important to have role models, you know, athletes who, you know, say, this is who I am and I'm proud of it, because it's visibility. It's visibility for, you know, younger athletes who say, I can have that platform one day as well, because, you know, my favorite athlete is up there and they're fine and they're successful. So I could potentially reach that point in my career as well one day. But I guess, yeah, we know that homophobia, transphobia is very present in a lot of sport, especially men's football.
Yeah, weren't you giving me an example about France?
Yeah, so basically since the season started, I think maybe a month and a half, there's been in France 20 incidents of homophobia in stadiums, according to the FAIR network.
Could that be more that people are aware of it now and not accepting it and reporting it? You know, maybe not that there's an increase in what's thinking, but there's more awareness around.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely could be a reason, and also could be a reason that because it's being talked about more, because there are more sanctions and measures in place to you know, penalize it and to not let it happen, that a lot of fans are also like, oh, we want to show you how it is, and kind of still, you know, put up the banners in stadiums as an act of defiance in a way. But it's really, really terrible that it's still happening, and there's still so much work to go on with that.
Well, not one to shirk away from things, and we're still just on university, Carolina. I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. You've done so much, and you're still at university. But in your fourth year, you got involved with futsal.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I love futsal. I think I was telling you earlier on, when I was running Scottish women's football, we had an international futsal tournament. Mm-hmm. For many years, we'd had an international five-a-side, and you've always got to get your rules, because it's international, applied to FIFA for them, and they didn't accept the five-a-side rules. They said it had to be futsal.
Right.
This was a whole new thing for us, and we had it at Kelvin Hall Arena, and I just thought it was fabulous. It was so fast-paced,
yeah.
You know, with the subs, the roll-on, roll-off subs,
yeah.
You know, the way that the ball bounced back in. There was just so much to see about it, and, you know, we actually made a video, which I think has been lost,
uh-huh.
And which is a shame, because now you're realising that what you were doing was building up a bit of history.
Yeah, for sure.
But tell me about your involvement in futsal, and you know, now that it's recognised with the Scottish FA, futsal's for everyone.
Mm.
Or is it?
So I got involved with the futsal in my fourth year of university. I became the club's first futsal officer, because that was the first year as well that futsal was being offered as part of the club alongside the kind of 11-a-side thing.
Was that women only, or did you mix the teams at that point?
So the men's had I think a futsal team already from maybe a few years before that, but this was the first year that the women's was bringing in a futsal. So it was really important that we kind of like really made it a core part of the club as well. But for me, actually, futsal is very, very big sport in Portugal and Spain specifically. So actually the first football team that I joined was a futsal team back in Portugal, maybe when I was about 8 or 9. So I guess in a way I was like, oh, I know about futsal. Like, and that's how I got the position.
Haven't you learned to take one step back?
Didn't really necessarily know that much about futsal, but you know, a few years down the line now it's with the university, it's become, you know, part of 100% core part of the club, and you know, actually been the top of the country in terms of university, the Edinburgh Uni. So,
and you're taking that as a little
a little bit
polishing yourself there.
A little bit, not all credit due to me, but we went actually to a tournament in Wales 1 year, which was in Bangor, which was really, really fun, against Bangor University. We lost that game, which we'll not talk about that, but it was a fun trip, kind of going in the minivans all the way to Wales, so that was fun. But yeah, I think obviously futsal in Scotland is still not that big, but it's definitely growing and growing. And you know, the Scottish FA is kind of taking it on as well, again, as trying to publicize it more, make it more part of the actual organization. But I believe that that there's no women's futsal team in Scotland. There's a men's team, but not a women's, not an official one, I don't think, yet.
Something we'll have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, so it's quite a mixed sport sometimes as well. I know there's definitely mixed futsal leagues in Edinburgh at least, so...
So you're still here in Scotland. In fact, you did your master's at Edinburgh University on sports policy management and international development. And that was also the year you got involved with Leap Sports. Mm-hmm. Now, you're a volunteer there, aren't you?
Yes.
What do you do?
So I've been a volunteer for about a year and a half almost now. I've done quite a bit of everything, actually, to be honest, but mainly, I'd say, was an events volunteer. So the first thing that I got involved in was Leap's annual festival fortnight. Happens for 2 weeks every June. And it's a festival that provides lots of sport, cultural, social activities all across kind of mainly the central belt of Scotland, I'd say. But always, and most of the activities are all free as well, so the community really has a chance to get involved in it. So that's kind of the first project that I got involved in. And then after that, kind of just snowballed, because every time they said, do you want to come to this? Yes. Do you want to come to that? Yes, yes, yes. So I really was a keen volunteer for sure. And one of the highlights actually was volunteering for Pride House Glasgow, which happened in August last year, so a year ago, during the European Championships. So that was a really, really exciting opportunity. And I learned a lot. And since there, I've had lots of different kind of involvements with Leap, as well as had the chance to get involved with their Football Versus Homophobia campaign, and you know, had the chance to go to Bulgaria as well for a kind of Erasmus Plus project, because they have a lot of involvement with that, a few projects a year, that was planning for a conference that's happening in Berlin at the end of October.
You are one busy woman.
Yeah, sort of.
I mean, you're still relatively young. In comparison to me, very young. And I'm thinking, my goodness, where have you got the time to do it all? Because, you know, you do a lot. You volunteer for Leap. But you also, in 2019, so just this year, you're appointed a Diversity Inclusion Youth Ambassador for the Scottish FA.
Yeah.
Now, this is quite a new thing that the Scottish FA have brought in, and hands up, you know, really, really good. A lot of sports are now taking more time to listen to young people,
yeah.
taking their thoughts. I'm chair of Scottish Sports Future. We've just had our youth panel. We've got a mm-hmm. young person sitting on our board.
Mm-hmm.
And I love all these changes. It's great. But tell me how this came about, because this sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so I actually heard of the opportunity through Siri, who works at Leap Sports. And she used to be the former Diversity and Inclusion Youth Ambassador. So she was actually part of the first time that they were running this program. And I'm now kind of part of the second group. So as you said, it is still quite a new thing. And I kind of, it's very similar in a way to what the English FA have. They have like a youth council as well. But that's been running for quite a bit longer, at least I think 5 years or longer, more than that. It was a process of, you know, we had to apply for it, and then we had an interview with a couple, you know, staff from the Scottish FA, Robin Drummond, who actually runs the Youth Ambassador program. And started back in January, and since then, you know, it's been really, really great, and been involved in quite a few things, had the opportunity to be involved in quite a lot. For example, back in April, I was asked if I wanted to go down to Wembley for the UEFA Equal Game Conference. So basically a conference all about equality and diversity in European football.
Just and, right up your street.
Yeah. And when they told me that, you know, I was like, yes, please, 100%.
Don't ask a silly question.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that experience was overwhelming in the sense that, but in a positive way, you know, arriving there and just seeing all these huge names and people that I'd heard about online, hearing talks from them and everything was just a really, really incredible experience.
And even just arriving at Wembley, the stadium itself, isn't it?
You know,
it's so imposing.
It's just massive.
Wow. Once a meeting there myself, and it's just that all the windows look onto the park, mm-hmm. and it's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So, I've had a lot of great opportunities come from, I guess, the different voluntary roles that I'm involved in. So,
but I think that just shows people that, you know, volunteering, it's people think that, you know, that they're giving back all the time, but actually you get so much from it yourself.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I think also that's something that one of the things that I really love about Scotland is just kind of the level of volunteering and how people are just really keen to always get involved and help out with different charities and different organizations. And I think that's such a great thing to be able to give back to the community, you know, and to be involved in things that you're really passionate about. So,
well, I think it's because people who've got a day job but have always wanted to do something else, an opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we to look at stripping back all the volunteers and all the organizations in Scotland, I don't know where we would be. So we need to give a big shout out to volunteers.
Yeah, for sure.
But you also attended, was it the Football Including Refugees in Europe conference?
Oh, that's actually happening at the end of the month.
Ah, right.
Yeah,
so this is coming up. Is this the one in Bulgaria? No?
No, this is happening at Hampden.
I can't keep it. Is it
happening? So on the 26th of September, I think. That's another opportunity that I'm going to be able to be involved in, because that's something I really want to learn more about as well, because I kind of read up about it quite a bit throughout my master's degree. And then actually at the UEFA conference, we had a sort of round table discussion about it. And I just want to see what else I can learn and how I can get involved. So
would you say that your future is in Scotland, the foreseeable future?
I mean, yeah, I think so. I mean, I feel I've already, as I said, been here almost 6 years. I feel like it is home in a way. It's a second home. But at least for now, you know, with the kind of projects that I'm involved in, I would like to see them through, because I'm not someone who really starts things and then kind of puts them to the side at all.
How long is your tenure with the youth committee at Scottish FA? What do you have, 2 years?
Yes, so it's 2 years. So we still have, you know, a year and a couple months to go, with a lot of work still.
Yeah, you'll be there through 2020, which will be an exciting time.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, with the Euros happening, that'll be really, really exciting for sure.
So whilst you're here, you're now looking for paid employment. I mean,
yes.
You've given so much to Scotland with all your volunteering. What kind of role are you looking for?
Well, actually, I'm not 100% sure, but I know that I'd like it in sort of the diversity inclusion sector or working with young people or involved in kind of the LGBTI community in some capacity as well. But something that maybe would involve the three, that would...
And we forgot to mention sport.
Yeah, and sport, of course, and sport. That's
so we're going to write this remit and then send it to a few organisations saying, you need to have this job, yeah. And I'm the woman for the job.
Yeah, so... but yeah, I would like to you know, continue living in Scotland and hopefully there's soon there's some opportunity for me here as well.
Well, I hope opportunity comes your way, because as I said, you've given so much to Scotland with all your volunteering. Mm-hmm. So let me wish you good luck for the future.
Thank you very much.
And if anyone out there has got a job that would fit Carolina's profile, please get in touch. Before we go, you have a song for us tonight.
Yes. So I picked this song because it's just one that I was very used to listen to as a kid when I was about 11 years old, and I have fond memories of listening in the car with my mom on the way to school in the mornings. So I guess this one's for her. And it's Danny California by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Thank you, Carolina.
Thank you very much.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.